Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnav Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem se kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktavinoda stands. Bhaktavinoda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopa Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavanam ki jai. Maturam Kijai, Navadipdam Kijai, Jagadatha Puridam Kijai, Jagadatha Sami Kijai, Yamanamai Kijai, Shivani Lasadevi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories, the assembled devotees, all glories, the assembled devotees, all glories, the assembled devotees, all glories, the Shri Guru and Gauranga. I guess that's about as high as it gets, right? Doesn't get any higher? Yeah. What, this, no, that portion goes higher. So we'd like to speak this evening about anger. First I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita about anger, and then we're going to stand up and do a little exercise about anger. Exercise, a demonstration? No. So we're reading from the 16th chapter. The text 21 of the Bhagavad Gita, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, Om Ganat Vidanda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chapsur Miritam Yena Kasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened our eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while we were blind in the darkness of ignorance. And you can put the lights on now, too. Lights, camera, action. That's good. That's enough. Those lights are enough. So, we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, and I'll just read the Sanskrit. And, ready? Trividam narakasyedam dvaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodas tata lobas tasmat eta triham chajet. There are three gates leading to this hell. So we have hell in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, London is hell. Anyway. I was just there, and I'll tell you why it is hell, but I'll tell you that in a second. Lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So Srila Prabhupada's purport, the beginning of demoniac life is described herein. One tries to satisfy his lust, and when he cannot, what happens? Anger and greed arise. A sane man who does not want to glide down to the species of demoniac life must try to give up these three enemies which can kill the self to such an extent that there will be no possibility of liberation from this material entanglement. Wonderful verse and report by His Divine Grace of the Prabhupada. So now we'll speak. We're going to stand up. I'm used to giving these talks standing up now. So, in the future we'll get a podium or a lectern for this. Okay, so, we just read the Bhagavad Gita. So anger, here's our topic, anger comes from a variety of sources. And we're going to describe the sources. Now there's spiritual anger and material anger. Here we go. Sources of anger. There's spiritual anger, and everyone please forgive my handwriting because that's not one of my fortes. Always wanted to be an artist, always wanted to have a disciple who's an artist, and there's Madhava Priya who's an artist. So spiritual anger, and the little thing, there's two types of two sources of spiritual anger. One comes from Krishna, that's God, and the other one comes from His pure devotees.
I hate to disappoint you. If you think your anger is spiritual and you're not a pure devotee, it's probably not spiritual. Okay? And the second source of anger is from materialistically entangled entities. Materialistic. Anyway, my spelling's probably wrong. Entity. Entangled souls. Souls. And that's us. Okay. So first we'll speak about the anger from the materialistically entangled souls. Where does that come from? And it comes, very interesting, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, he talks about the source of anger. He says, Jayato vishyakpun sam sangosteshu pajayate sangatsan jayate kama kama krodha vijayate. And so, this verse, some of you are familiar with this verse. It says, when you contemplate what? Does anyone know this verse? Sense objects, then what happens? You get attachment. And then from attachment comes lust. And then lust comes anger. There's more to that verse. Anyway, it says from anger, then one becomes bewildered, etc., etc., and then loses his opportunity to think clearly. I'm just paraphrasing the verse. So anyway, as far as attachment to material sense objects, we can become attached to practically any sense object if we contemplate it enough, which is very interesting. Just like you see people in this world who are attached to eating abominable things. Like Prabhupada gave the example, in a certain place in the world, people take this or drink this, what's called liquid dog. And what that is, they throw all the dead bodies in a vat of whatever, and they let it ferment for about a year, and then they have a tap, and they take a bottle, and they sell it. It's a very expensive delicacy. That's liquid dog. So if you contemplate something enough, just like Prabhupada sometimes would talk about the things that people eat in America, you know, delicacies. Like Prabhupada commented one time about lobsters. Everyone knows what a lobster is? No, you don't know what a lobster is. Prabhupada said it's like eating what? Does anyone know what Prabhupada said? Pus. Pus. P-U-S-S. That's like when you get an injury, you get an infection, the pus comes out. Okay. Don't want to gross everyone out. So you can become attached to almost anything, and the reason we become attached, two reasons. Actually, there's a gross physical reason as well as a subtle reason. The gross reason is we develop neural pathways. That's actually getting into your brain. You have all these neurons, and when you start to do something a lot, you have certain habits, you get pathways in these neurons. Just like if you go through the woods, and you make a trail, the first time you make that trail, it's all overgrown and everything like that, and as you continue to walk through the woods and more people walk through the woods, it actually becomes a bona fide pathway or a trail. It becomes worn down. So that's one reason. And another reason we get attached or habituated to certain things is that we have a subtle body. And that subtle body becomes conditioned by its experiences, karanam guna sangasya sadasa janma jonishu, by experiences in this world. So the subtle body is the body of linga sharira, the body of desires. And the gross body is this pancha mahabhuta body, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And so both become conditioned by certain attachments. So when we become attached to something, and we don't get it, what happens? We become angry. And when we become attached to something and we do get it, what happens? We also get angry. That's very interesting. Krishna says in the Gita, Avratam Jnanametena, Jnanino Nishavairina, Kama Rupena Kuntiya, what's the rest of that? Dushparena Ana Lena Cha. What does he say? That one is never satisfied, even if he gets the object of his desires. Never satisfied. It's just like throwing gasoline on a fire. The fire gets further and further and further inflamed. So even when you get the object of your desire, and when you don't get it, you're angry. So it seems like a catch-22. If I get it, I'm angry. If I don't get it, I'm angry. So what am I going to do? How do I get over anger? What am I to do about it? Just like we see that people get angry in either circumstance. Even animals, for example. I was just thinking today about sharks. That if you go swimming, you have to be careful not to go swimming when? When the sharks are feeding, when they're hungry. Right? Otherwise, you can go swimming with sharks, they're just fine. But when they're hungry, they have that desire, then they get angry and they attack you, and of course they eat you at that particular time. And also you learn not to talk to people before they eat. Yes, it's a fact. And if you talk to people before they eat, just like I have one friend, sometimes we're asking him for donations for different things, and I always call him up, bona fide things, I always call him up, ask him, have you taken prasadam yet? And if he has not taken prasadam, I said, well, how about if I call you in an hour or two? It's not that important, I'll call you back. And that's what I do, I call him back, and it's always successful later on. So that's... But one has desires, and those desires are endless, and they become further inflamed. And our expectations for the fulfillment of the desire are not actually realistic, too. I mean, let's give you an example. Let's give a romantic example. How about a romantic example? A man marries a woman. I know this is abnormal, but, this happens. So a man marries a woman, and then he expects all his desires to be fulfilled by that particular romantic relationship. All his desires and needs to be fulfilled. And guess what? Guess what? It doesn't happen. And there's anger. And there's more anger sometimes in the family between people whom you love, people who you're related to, than there is in Iraq. Yeah, statistically. Statistically, we read about this in the newspaper every day, because there's expectations that people have to, they're supposed to fulfill your desires and satisfy your needs. And so you're making these demands on them, right? And when they don't do it, you get angry at them. Isn't it? It happens. Or, your demands are insatiable, like Chitraketu Prabhu. Not Prabhu, but Chitraketu. He had a desire for a son. And he had one wife. It didn't work out. And then he had another wife. It didn't work out. And then he had another wife, and he made it all the way to 10 million. Pretty good. And finally he had a son, Harsha Shoka, and that son was actually killed by the 9,999,999 wife who got envious of the one wife. They were angry and envious of the one wife. Okay. So, anyway... So anger comes from fulfilled desires, because fulfilled desires can never be fulfilled, or the object of your desire you can get, but you can never fulfill the actual desire in this world. So it's not hopeless. We're going to talk about this at the end. Or it comes from not fulfilled, unfulfilled objects, or not getting the object of your desire. So that's our position. Maybe I should write something down about this so we understand. Comes from fulfilled desires, not desired, but fulfilled, let's say getting the object, but the desire is never satisfied. Or it comes from not getting the object. Forgive me for the handwriting. I flunked it in school, so anyway. Sorry. Okay, now let's take something that's brighter and more friendly, which is Krishna's anger. It's actually much more interesting than our anger. So, the question is, does Krishna get angry for the same reason? Does anyone know? Yes and no. It's a trick question. One thing is, Let me get the red marker and keep them both with me. One thing is that Krishna has everything. He doesn't need anyone. He's aptakama. He's swarat. He's independent. So he gets whatever he wants, right? So how can we say that Krishna gets angry for the same reason? How come I'm saying that? Does anyone have any ideas? That's right, you got it. Jagat Guru is the intelligent one. There's one thing that Krishna wants that he can't have. He's God and he can't have it. Imagine that. You get to be God. No, he doesn't get to be God. He's always God. But can you imagine someone's God and he can't have it? That is our love and our devotion. Because the way we are constructed, the way Krishna has arranged things, is that we have free will. Right? Free will means that Krishna does not and cannot force us to love him. So Krishna wants our love. So if he doesn't get our love, sometimes he gets angry. What does that mean? We read in the Vedic literatures that Krishna, of course, he loves us. His anger is not the, negative, hateful anger that we have. Like when we get angry, we really hate someone. Isn't it? We're going to talk about this. You judge someone, right? If you get angry, let's say someone cuts you off in the car. You're driving the car and someone else cuts you off. What happens? You get angry with him and you call him a what?
Idiot,
jerk. And if you're sophisticated, if you're a psychologist, you'll call him a psychopath. And if you're an anthropologist, what will you call him? An aborigine. So, anyway, so that's not why Krishna gets angry. Krishna gets angry because of love, and he always loves even when he's angry. Just like we know that Krishna stays within our hearts regardless of what we are doing or thinking or saying. Just like the other day I was in Finland and I was walking to the temple early in the morning and there were drunks there lying in the street. Now I got them to say Krishna, Gauranga, whatever. They rolled over for a while. And I was thinking, Krishna is in each and every one of those drunks' hearts. He's just sitting in. How much? My mother doesn't love me so much that if I became a drunkard, which I'm not going to be, my mother wouldn't stay there with me, standing by my side, you know, I love you. But Krishna loves the living entities so much that he stays with them in spite of them doing all these crazy things. You go bungee jumping, Krishna's bungee jumping with you. You get drunk, he's not getting drunk, but Krishna's watching you, he's witnessing like two birds in the same tree. That's what the Upanishads say. So that's real love. So Krishna's love is causeless. So Krishna's anger is a manifestation of that love. And he's pained by our unwillingness to love him. He's pained. It's described in the Bhagavatam when the demons say some nasty things to Krishna. Krishna experiences that like shaft-like words that are piercing his heart. He actually becomes hurt by that. But it's interesting that when the devotees who are performing some pastimes like Grandfather Bhishma, and they are shooting shafts at Krishna, Krishna experiences those like what? Flower garlands or lover's bites. Don't ask me what lover's bites are. I'm a sannyasi. You know, someone bites me, and you know, that's not love, but Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavatam. So I accept that, you know, that's absolute truth, even though I don't have realization of that particular aspect of the absolute truth. So Grandfather Bhishma, he was shooting arrows at Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra, right? And Krishna experienced them like love does. He didn't get angry at Grandfather Bhishma. Someone shoots arrows at me, I get angry at them, right? Yet, when someone who is not Krishna conscious says some words about God, then Krishna actually gets hurt and angry because of that. You see this, Krishna fighting with people. And we're not only talking about those famous demons like Haranyaksha, Haranyakashipu. Of course, they were devotees acting as demons. But even people who denigrate, like atheists, for example. Everybody knows what an atheist is? No. No. Atheist means without theism, without belief in God, it causes God pain because he loves us so much. So he really gets upset at that. But his anger is very productive. That's the difference between his, another difference between his anger and our anger, because when he does something out of anger, it brings you closer to him. Like when he kills a demon, what happens? Demon gets liberated. So it's a very productive anger. Whereas our anger is what? Destructive. It doesn't accomplish the goal that we have. Like, for example, you get cut off by someone, you're driving your car, and you get angry, call them an idiot, psychopath, nut, whatever you call aborigine, depending on your level of education. Right? Does it make him a better driver? It's not very productive. In other words, that's what I've experienced with my anger. It's not very productive. It doesn't accomplish. That's one reason I'm interested in controlling anger. Because it doesn't get me what I need, what I desire. There's other better strategies than anger, right? It's very, very interesting. Anyway, so Krishna is out of love and he's pained, whereas our anger is out of like hate and name calling. So the question is, oh yes, another point is we want to talk about a bona fide spiritual master. Actually, that's the same thing. We don't need to start with another page. The bona fide spiritual master gets angry at the disciple out of love, too. Not because he needs something material from the disciple, but because he's feeling so much pain the disciple is separated from Krishna. And when the disciple experiences that anger of the spiritual master, what happens? He gets ecstatic. He doesn't feel, I'm being abused by Gurudev. And there's stories about this. One story, very interesting story, is about Lord Nityananda, the original spiritual master. Lord Nityananda one time got angry at a devotee named Shivananda Sen. Interesting story. They were on their way, the Vaishnavas were on their way to Jagannath Puri from West Bengal. And as they were on their way, the Shivananda Sen, who was in charge of the Vaishnavas, paying all their tolls and everything like that, he had to stay behind to take care of some tolls. And therefore, he couldn't make adequate arrangement at that time for Lord Nityananda's prasadam. So Lord Nityananda was getting hungry. Of course, Lord Nityananda is not a conditioned soul or jiva soul. He's the Supreme Lord, the first expansion of the Lord. He's Balaram, the original spiritual master. So he was getting angry. And he was getting so angry that he cursed Shivananda Sen's son to die. And Shivananda Sen's wife was just like shaking, oh, my son is going to die. So finally Shivananda Sen came back and his wife said, your son has been cursed to die by Lord Nityananda. And Shivananda said, whatever Lord Nityananda says, yeah, that's fine. And then he went to Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda did what to him? He kicked him. So instead of going to the police and reporting Lord Nityananda, he felt ecstatic. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting kicked by Lord Nityananda. Would anyone here mind getting kicked by Lord Nityananda? That would be an ecstatic experience, you know. Like that. I wouldn't mind getting kicked by Srila Prabhupada. Because it was out of love. The difference. Out of love, and it's purifying to get kicked by the Supreme Lord or by his pure devotee. But to get kicked by someone ordinarily is not very nice. Alright. So, that's the pure devotee's anger. But sometimes we find someone, or just another little story, someone who may be acting as a spiritual master may not be fully qualified to be a guru. even though he's acting and taking the position. He hasn't controlled what? Vacho vega manasa krona vega. And there's an interesting story about that. Of course, if someone is acting as a guru and he's not qualified and not controlling his anger, we can call him a kangaroo instead of a guru. You understand? Kangaroo, you know, like the little animals that jump up and down. And you know what a kangaroo is? They have little pouches. Okay. You can call him a kangaroo instead of a guru. So, there's an interesting story that Vasishtha Muni had a disciple named Maharaj Nimi. And Maharaj Nimi wanted to go on Harinam. Okay, here's a Harinam story for you, Bhagavad Priya. He wanted to go on Harinam, but Gurudev, Vasishtha Muni, said, wait till I get back from attending the sacrifice with the demigods. And he was thinking, I want to go to the demigod sacrifice first because they give bigger donations. As they say, follow the money trail. And you know, Maharaj Nimi is nice, he's a king, he has a lot of gold, but you know, demigods, you know, they're like Bill Gates compared to just one of us. So he went to the demigods, performed the sacrifice. In the meantime, Maharaj Nimi went on Harinam, did a devotional sacrifice without waiting for his guru. So his guru came back, saw his disciple had gone out in Harinam without his permission, without him being there, and the guru got angry. He said, because you disobeyed my instructions, my dear disciple, I curse you to die. So in those days, the curses actually had great power. Nowadays, you know, we've done so many curses and none of them have worked. But and so many blessings, I don't know if any of them have worked either. But so he cursed, his disciple immediately died, and while he was dying, his disciple, Maharaj Nimi, gave his guru, Guru Dakshin. He said, I curse you also to die. So both the guru and disciple died at that point. And Vasishtha Muni, later on, he came back through the summit of Mitra and Varuna. And Maharaj Nimi, it's an interesting story, he was such a great pure devotee that when the sages brought him back to life, by utilizing the blessings of the demigods, he said, I don't want to go back to come back to life. I want to go back to Godhead. Okay. So that's not what we want in a guru. Someone who's going to curse us for going on Harinam. So not a good idea. So okay. So so let's go over what anger is for as far as ourselves, conditioned souls. We mentioned before, when we get angry, the first thing we do, and we should really understand this process, the first thing we do when we get angry, steps of anger for us, not how to overcome it, is what? We pass judgment. Because unless you pass judgment on someone, you can't get angry with them. You got to call them a name. Like Prabhupada was fond of quoting, this Bengali saying is that give a dog a mad name and what? Hang him or kick him. So you really have to give someone a bad name. Otherwise, how can you get angry with them? You know, if you're nice, you're wonderful, you're a spirit soul, you're part and parcel of Krishna, you're intelligent. I mean, I can't deal with anger if I'm thinking about those things, right? It's very hard. I have to say, you idiot, fool, jackass, rascal. And actually, we can do an exercise. Let's hear some nice judgmental words that you all use when you get angry. Does any volunteers here? Any volunteers? Raise your hand, yeah. Stupid. Here's a good one. Okay. Any more judgmental words? Rascal. Lazy. Lazy. But did I hear turd there? I heard someone say that. You know, jerk. Yeah. Any other word? I'm sure we have an adequate vocabulary for finding fault with people. It's just that you're all shy about these things. What's that? Full of pancake batter. At least that's using words that are kosher. Pancake batter. Okay, at least there's no four-letter words there. Anyway, we probably have a bigger vocabulary for finding fault in people than we do for praising people. So you get the idea. And once you use those words, you feel entitled to actually get angry with someone, isn't it? So that's the first step in anger. It's very interesting. And then the second step is very interesting. Okay, second step, we'll go to the page. Two. And then we blame the other person for making us angry, right? You made me angry, right? Second step in anger. Not saying we should follow this, but this is what we've been doing so far with our lives. Blame for making me angry. You made me angry. It's your fault that I broke the window. It's your fault that I broke the food processor by throwing it at you. In the old days, they used to use rolling pins. Now they use food processors. But actually, the interesting thing is, the other person did make us angry. What made us angry, according to what we talked about before, was our desire. The good old desire. Is the cause for our anger. Actually, no one can make us angry. It is our desire which makes us, in many cases, make a demand on the person to behave nicely, like driving a car, or to give us something. I mean, for example, I'll give you an example. Let's say someone is married and they desire what's their wife to cook for them, rolled chapatis, right? Three or four times a day, you know, whatever, fresh chapatis. And if they don't get it, they're making that demand, they get angry, right? They get angry. So who's at fault? The person who didn't make the chapatis or their desire? The desire. The person who had the desire is at fault. So the desire is the cause, or the person's desire, which is never satisfied, burns like fire, is the cause of the anger. Not that poor person who couldn't cook the chapatis because they were completely exhausted. Right? Interesting. Interesting analysis. Okay. And so no one can make us angry. So, but there's a different, something we should understand and related to this is needs and desires. Needs versus desires. We do have certain needs. How can we deny that? We do have a need to eat, right? Isn't that a need? We do have a need to breathe. We do have a need to be protected. And even if we're devotees, you have these needs. That's something you Krishna conscious people may find as a surprise. You do have needs. What happens if you don't breathe, Jagadguru? You die. If you don't eat, you die. You have a need for social interaction. You have a need for happiness, a need for joy. All these things are there, even on the spiritual platform. So what is the difference between a need and a desire? Desires are what we call a strategy for meeting a particular need. And so if you become fixated on a desire, on a particular strategy, that's where the anger arises. You want me to repeat that? Okay, if you become fixated on a particular desire, an object, like we're talking about jayato vishyakum sanga sesha vijayate, and that's a strategy for meeting a need. Let's say I have a need for food. I'll give you the example, practical example. Okay. And my desire is that you cook pizza for me. And because my desire, I'm meditating on pizza. I'll give you a practical example about pizza. If I mention the name pizza enough times, most of you will salivate here. And your desire will increase. Because you'll start meditating on it. Let's try it. pizza, delicious pizza with cheese on it, you know, olive oil and cheese, very hot pizza with a nice crust on it. That's called, in the Vedic terms, thinking, feeling, willing. When you think about something, you begin to feel it, and then you will it, and now you're probably tonight you're going to cook it or go out for it or something like that. So, but my need is not for pizza, my need is just food. Because I have this desire to fulfill the need. The need is neutral. The need is neither bad nor good. It just is there. Desire, need for food. But because I have this desire for pizza and he has to make it, and if he doesn't make it, I'm going to get angry, then the desire causes the anger. Does that make it clear? Just like I gave the example, I was talking about this in Croatia. One of my disciples had to cook for me, and we arrived somewhere late, and I started snapping my fingers, "You have to make it immediately for me, now. And I was joking, but everyone thought I was angry, and they became scared of me at that particular point. So desire is the cause of anger rather than the basic needs. So we have to know the difference so we don't deny our basic needs and we can identify what desires are. So now we're going to give a method for dealing with anger, which is very interesting. Here's a method, very quick and easy method. You can deal with anger. Dealing with anger. Anger. Okay? First thing is don't suppress it. Well, that's also... Let me get a black one. Don't suppress or repress. Why don't we suppress or repress anger? Does anyone know? You'll explode. Yeah, there's several things that can happen. Like, I can act... We see this sometimes between husband and wife. Sometimes the wife will act real submissively. "Oh, yes, dear, whatever you want." "Yes, dear," she's thinking, "okay, one more time." And then after a few weeks, out of the blue, boom, the poor guy gets like a punch in the mouth. Or, you know, happens vice versa, husband, wife. Because after a while, it's like the straw that broke the what? Camel's back. Even though it's an insignificant thing, the person will explode after some point. So there's another thing that happens if you suppress or repress it in particular, is you develop diseases, all sorts of physical diseases, and you internalize it. Like that. And there's a whole science of what's called body syndromes, where you can connect certain diseases with certain mental states. Like, I have a friend who's into management, and he has to manage a lot of people, and he has back problems. So, anyway, the same thing happens when you suppress or repress anger. That you're not supposed to do that. So then what are you supposed to do? Just go and punch someone, or buy a gym set, you know, lift weights, or go to the woods and emit a primal scream? No, not really. We become aware, take responsibility. One, take responsibility. I'm responsible for my anger. Stop blaming the other person. I am angry. I'm responsible. It's my desires that cause this anger. That's the first thing we do. We take responsibility. We become aware of the judgment that we're imposing on the other person or thing. You can even become angry. Awareness of judgment. You can even become angry with a thing. Like, how often, who here becomes angry with their computer from time to time? Did you ever call your computer names? So anger is not only person-directed, it's thing-directed. At their car. Who here has become angry at their car? Anyone? No one's become angry at their car. Okay. So we become aware of the judgment that we're imposing on that particular object. And then we become aware of our desire awareness. And then, interestingly enough, we become aware of the need from which that desire came. Isn't it? Because the need is bona fide. It's neither right nor wrong. It's a basic need, like food. Give the example. Let's say if he doesn't cook for me, and I'm telling you, you made me angry. You jerk, you jackass, you nonsense, you've fallen. I'm cursing you, you're an offender. In the holy names. It's tough. Okay, so instead of going through that whole exercise or repressing it, what I do is I say that, you know, I'm causing myself to be angry because of my desires, and I'm calling him a jerk, jackass, you know, offender, and everything like that because of my desires, and because I'm imposing this desire that he has to cook for me, he has to do this, I have to eat pizza tonight. But I do have a need for food. So let me figure out another strategy. See, in this way, another strategy. Once I take responsibility, I understand the basic need. What's my other strategy? Cook for myself. That's a practical strategy. And actually, at the root of all conflict resolution is changing strategies to meet needs. Many of you studied conflict resolution like that. And guess what? When you go through these steps, your anger actually dissolves. It just disappears. Because you're taking responsibility, you're understanding where it comes from, the judgment, your desire that's never going to be satisfied, and then it goes away. And if you don't go through this and you just remain angry, guess what? The person who suffers is you rather than the person who you're angry with or the computer that you're angry with. Computers don't suffer. Because the person who bites his tongue is the one who suffers, not the person who bites his tongue looks at. You know, you bite your tongue, you're the one who's suffering, your tongue is suffering. So when you learn this process of taking responsibility and going through these steps, in one sense, you become emotionally liberated. I mean, you feel like a whole burden has been lifted from your shoulder. When you can control anger, which is one of the three gateways going to hell, Tama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudra, then you're emotionally liberated, you're not controlled, and you can function in many ways that you couldn't function before. But there's a problem with that too. Uh-oh. What's the problem with being emotionally liberated? What's the problem with being in the mode of goodness? No problem? Yeah, you become happy. I'm emotionally liberated, I'm not controlled by anger anymore. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. It's a wonderful feeling, it's a wonderful day. Just like I had a disciple in some other country, I won't mention the country. She told me that, you know, I'm not going to chant my rounds, some disciple, but anyway. Because everything is going so nicely. I was thinking, you know, what is the logic? You know, Krishna's blessed me, he's giving me everything, and I'm afraid if I chant my rounds and I remember how horrible, you know. Remember about this. Anyway, I don't know what the logic is, but everything's going so nice. Oh, my husband's so nice. I'm expecting a baby. That'll be so nice. The weather is so nice. I'm young. Everything is so nice. So that's the problem with just doing this. We should do this because we should control anger and take responsibility, but at the same time, we have to use that position of being freed from the pushings of lust, anger, greed, illusion, and envy to get into bhakti. Because all this, with just controlling it, you'll just become a peaceful person in this material world. What's the use of that anyway? Right? So that's really the ultimate. You can control anger by using this system, but you must take up devotional service if you want to ultimately make a solution to the problems of life. And just finally, I wanted to end with just some stories of devotees who were put in difficult circumstances and they were able to control their anger in a very wonderful way. Let's take Haridas Thakur, who was whipped in 22 marketplaces, and he was not at all feeling angry. He was feeling compassionate towards the people who were beating him, right? What an exemplary story. And even with Lord Ramchandra, remember Ravana, our friend Ravana had stolen Sita Devi. And Lord Ramchandra was very angry at Ravana. But he was ready at any point if Ravana surrendered to do what? Forgive him and accept him as his own. That's pretty amazing. Prabhupada says the quality, one of the primary qualities of a Brahmana is shama, which means forgiveness. So forgiveness is extremely important. It can only be accomplished if one can deal with anger. Not suppress, not repress, just to go over, but deal with anger. And one practical experience I had with this, and I'm not saying that I can control my anger yet, but I was at a few days ago, in Philadelphia Airport. And some of the devotees know this story. And there was bad weather. And the planes had been grounded. My particular plane had been on the runway for 2 hours. And finally the pilot said, the weather's all right now, but our time has run out. I'm not allowed to work more than a certain amount of hours every month. Did you ever, any of you have that experience? That said the crew has overdone their time, so we're sorry we have to go back. And because this was weather-related, and obviously it's not weather-related, you're not going to be able to be given a hotel room for the night or reimbursed or anything like that. Tough luck, kids. You know, basically... He didn't use the words tough luck. So anyway, we got back to the airport and went to the ticket counter, and there was a long line of people, another hour wait, you know, just to rebook the tickets, an hour or two wait, and the people were seething with anger, ready to kill the ticket agent, you know, they had to keep guards there, you know. I'll never fly this airline again, you damn this, you damn that, and he's like ranting and raving. And I decided, I said, what's the use of me getting angry? It's not going to get me an airplane, you know, not get me on an airplane. So with a peaceful mind, I just called someone up and found out the number of my mobile phone of the airline and rebooked my flight while they were all waiting online because I had a peaceful mind. Isn't it? So if you have a peaceful mind, you can do this. And so then after some time, you know, I also had to change my ticket there for another reason. I got to the ticket agent and I said, oh, it's a very nice night, isn't it? And the ticket agent said, you know, what have you been smoking? I said, no, I mean, getting angry is not going to solve anything. And I was very nice to the ticket agent. And she said, basically, I made her night because yeah, all these people were screaming and yelling, ready to kill her. So, in other words, you can contribute a lot to other people and even to your own welfare and to accomplishing your own goals in life, and especially spiritual goals, if you can learn how to deal with anger. And very, very important topic, anger, and how to deal with it. All right, so I think it's time for prasadam. So any questions or comments about any of the points we made? About anger, how to deal with anger, when do we get angry, why should we get angry, does Krishna get angry, why does he get angry? What's that? How do you identify the need to take some introspection? We have basic needs, like food, water, you know, the basic material needs like that, gross material needs. We have needs for social interaction. We have needs for fun. We have needs for spiritual upliftment. Basic needs. This basic needs that everybody has. These are common denominators with every human being. And so I can give you a list later on if you want that, of basic needs. So once you identify those needs, then you try another strategy to control them, rather than demanding that particular person or that particular object fills those needs, or getting something from that person, like the pizza that I mentioned before. You can't always have pizza. Yeah. Yeah, there's anger in different modes of nature too. You want to hear about that? Well, the mode of ignorance, one gets angry at everything. I mean, usually it doesn't matter. Like that's when someone's completely like intoxicated. In the mode of passion, one gets angry at something that's interfering. If someone is purely in the mode of goodness, they don't get angry. If someone is Krishna conscious, their anger is productive in terms of bringing someone to Krishna consciousness. So there's different ways that people interact. But the main thing is that there are particular times when we should exhibit anger. Particularly, for example, if someone is being attacked. Let's say someone comes in walking down the street and someone else is attacked. Then we should become angry at that particular time with the person who is attacking and defend the person who is being attacked. So there are appropriate times for anger. But the problem is if you're always angry or always on, what do they call it, hair trigger. Does everyone know what a hair trigger is? It means short temper. That means when you have a gun, there's certain guns that even if you sneeze, it goes off. That's called a hair trigger. So if you're always angry, always on hair trigger, you have problems. Not only do you have problems, you know, with making friends and keeping friends, and not only do you have problems spiritually, but you have problems physically because your body is always in a state of like a severe like reaction, like with a lot of adrenaline, cortisol, and other things that will hurt your body. So there's a problem physiologically with anger, there's a problem sociologically with anger, and we should be careful only to express anger when it is productive insofar as our spiritual life is concerned, or insofar as protecting someone. Those are the appropriate times for anger. Otherwise, it's destructive and doesn't accomplish our purpose. And we experience it many times, like even a parent sometimes gets angry at the child, it makes the child want to do the opposite thing. Like I remember, I mean, I don't know if I should reveal about my childhood, my mother would get angry with me sometimes and say, I'm going to make it so you cannot sit for a week. And I would say, what would I say? I'm going to listen to you? No, I would say, you will never catch me. And she never caught me, thank God. Thank Krishna, because I chanted nicely. Krishna protected, and I chanted the prayers of Lord Nrisingadeva, so. Lord Nrisingadeva protected me. Okay. On that note, I think it's time for prasadam. All glorious Krishna Bhangare, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, everything right? What's that? Yeah, that's finalized. That's finalized.
So the program on Friday, what's your...
I think we'll just go to Prakash's house. I haven't seen him for a long time.